Welcome to the Political Rewind. I'm Madhoni Muturi, and it's finally all over. Coming up, how did he do that?
From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Robert Siegel.
And I'm Melissa Block. Barack Obama's path from underdog candidate to president-elect is among the most remarkable and least probable success stories in the history of American politics. Obama's skill as an orator, an organizer, and a politician certainly helped him win. But as NPR's Don Gagne reports, he also ran a near-flawless campaign, one that always seemed to know how to respond to crisis.
A campaign is not a static thing. It's a process, an unpredictable one. Things don't go as planned, so the real trick is to adapt. Take the Obama campaign. Way back when, he was an underdog, taking on front-runner Hillary Clinton. It looked like his big issue would be the war.
Most of you know that I opposed this war from the start. I thought it was a tragic mistake.
That was from his very first speech of this campaign in Springfield, Illinois, in February of 07. Discontent over the war did help propel Obama's early success in the Iowa caucuses and later on Super Tuesday. But during the general election, the war actually receded as an issue, replaced by a sudden jolt of dire news from Wall Street.
We are in the middle. We're in the middle of the worst economic crisis since the Great Depression.
Just prior to the economic crisis, the Obama campaign seemed to be slumping. His longstanding lead in the polls had evaporated. His supporters openly worried that potential victory might be slipping away. Then came the failure of the giant investment bank, Lehman Brothers. Obama had long talked about the need to help working families. But now the economy became the centerpiece of his campaign. He blamed the policies of President Bush and John McCain.
They said they wanted to let the market run free, but instead they let it run wild.
Obama prepared to go hard after McCain on the issue to highlight the GOP nominee's own past statements about not being an expert on the economy. But then McCain reacted to the crisis on Wall Street this way.
Our economy, I think, still... The fundamentals of our economy are strong, but these are very...
He said that the fundamentals of the economy are still strong. Senator McCain, what economy are you talking about?
Then McCain suspended his campaign and called upon Obama to do the same. It was a moment of decision for the Democrat, and he chose to keep campaigning and to keep pressing his attacks on the issue.
It is... going to be part of the president's job to deal with more than one thing at once.
Exit polls show that the economy was by far the most significant issue for voters yesterday, giving Obama a big edge. He can credit his message, but also the huge organizational and financial advantages he used to keep McCain on the defensive the rest of the way. Over the course of the long campaign, there were other big tests Obama needed to overcome just to make it to the general election. Perhaps none bigger than the emergence of a voice from Chicago's
America,
South Side.
No, no, no. Not God bless America. God damn America.
That was Obama's longtime pastor, Jeremiah Wright. The video of the sermon surfaced in March. Suddenly, race became the issue of the campaign. Obama responded with a lengthy speech on race in America. His remarks were widely praised and very personal. The speech included this.
Reverend Wright's comments were not only wrong, but divisive. Divisive at a time when we need unity. Racially charged at a time when we need to come together to solve a set of monumental problems.
Finally, another key part of Obama's success has been the securing of prominent endorsements along the way. Senator Edward Kennedy and JFK's daughter, Caroline Kennedy, came on board. And very late in the campaign came this backing from an iconic military figure, former Secretary of State, General Colin Powell.
I think he is a transformational figure. He is a new generation coming into the world stage, onto the American stage, and for that reason, I'll be voting for Senator Barack Obama.
It was one more piece of reassurance for anyone still wondering about Obama's readiness, providing an unexpected boost that complemented all of the planning, the organizing, and the adapting that the president-elect's team did along the way. Don Gagne, NPR News, Chicago.
As for the McCain campaign, NPR's Scott Horsley reports that the Republican candidate's standing dropped with the Dow Jones Industrial Average.
John McCain always faced long odds in this election, but senior advisor Steve Schmidt says he still might have won were it not for the near collapse of the global financial system.
John McCain, I believe, is the only Republican that could have hung in there in this race, kept it close, competitive. The middle of September, we're ahead. Financial class put us behind.
But whatever advantage the meltdown gave to the Democrats, McCain's handling of the situation made it worse. When a financial bailout bill was in trouble 6 weeks ago, McCain abruptly called a news conference and took a gamble.
Tomorrow morning, I'll suspend my campaign and return to Washington after speaking at the Clinton Global Initiative.
It was a grand gesture meant to showcase McCain's selfless leadership.
We must meet as Americans, not as Democrats or Republicans, and we must meet until this crisis is resolved.
But once he got to Washington, it soon became clear that McCain had no real plan to fix the bailout package and no real pull with House Republicans to get it passed. Instead of looking presidential and reassuring, McCain looked desperate and alarming, a stark contrast to Barack Obama. Having raised the stakes, McCain lost the bet. Even before the crisis hit, McCain was challenged by Americans' deepening concern over their pocketbooks. After all, for much of the last 2 years, McCain said he was running for president because he wanted to combat Islamic terrorism.
Any president who does not regard this threat as transcending all others does not deserve to sit in the White House.
Once the economy transcended terrorism in voters' minds, McCain found himself far less prepared. His faith in tax cuts as the lone engine of job creation sounded too much like the Bush playbook of the last 8 years. He also seemed torn by a split personality, a Ronald Reagan advocate for limited government one day, a populist Teddy Roosevelt-style activist the next. No one could doubt McCain's fighting spirit, but neither could anyone know where his next punch might land. If suspending his campaign was a big roll of the dice, McCain's choice of Sarah Palin as his running mate was an even bigger one.
She's not from these parts, and she's not from Washington. And when you get to know her, you're going to be as impressed as I am.
When they got to know Palin, millions of Americans were impressed, especially social conservatives who adopted her as their champion. But others got the impression she was not ready. And that undermined McCain's experience argument against Obama. It also called into question his promise to put country ahead of political calculation. Last night, McCain called Palin an impressive new voice in the Republican Party and said he'd leave any second guessing about his campaign to others.
Every candidate makes mistakes, and I'm sure I made my share of them. But I won't spend a moment of the future regretting what might have been.
McCain has long thought of himself as lucky. He survived plane crashes, fire at sea, and years in a POW camp. His political career was also blessed by good timing and fortunate matchups. But his political fortunes could not survive this year's Democratic tidal wave that washed over the country. McCain often said he was running to inspire a generation of young people to serve a cause greater than their own self-interest. This year, many Americans were ready for such inspiration, but more found it in McCain's opponent. Scott Horsley, NPR News, Phoenix.
I'm Muthoni Muturi, and it's the Political Rewind. Finally today, America, please adjust your expectations.
It's Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Steve Inskeep.
And I'm Renee Montaigne. President-elect Barack Obama won't have much time to savor victory. In a little over 2 months, he takes over two wars, a staggering economy, and a soaring federal budget deficit. He's already planning his new government, and the many problems he faces may include this: handling the high expectations generated by his campaign of hope and change. Here's NPR national political correspondent Mara Liasson.
On Tuesday night at his victory party, Barack Obama said that his election was the answer to anyone who still doubted that America was a place where all things are possible.
It's the answer that led those who've been told for so long by so many to be cynical and fearful and doubtful about what we can achieve, to put their hands on the arc of history and bend it once more toward the hope of a better day. It's been a long time coming, but tonight because of what we did on this day, in this election, at this defining moment, change has come to America.
President-elect Obama's supporters expect a lot to change now that he will be in the White House. Here's a sampling from just one recent Obama rally.
He will end the war.
You'll see our image in the world standings improve.
I expect that my tuition's going to go down.
I know he's going to make our schools better.
We will get the tax cut for the middle class.
My personal health care issues will be greatly improved. My ability to make a living in this country will be greatly improved.
And I expect him to work some magic.
Obama will need all the magic he can muster to solve the huge problems he's inheriting. On the campaign trail, he made it sound easy. The only sacrifice he asked people to make was turning off the lights and checking the pressure in their tires. Norman Ornstein, a scholar of Congress and the presidency at the American Enterprise Institute, says high expectations are a burden for Obama.
It's a burden in a whole host of ways. We still have a dysfunctional government. One election doesn't change that. One dramatically charismatic, competent figure doesn't change that. A substantial number of new Democrats in the House and Senate doesn't change that.
Ornstein says Obama will have to manage some particularly high expectations from his own Democratic Party with their newly expanded majorities in the House and Senate.
If the expectations are high generally, they're highest on the left. You got a group of people who think, first of all, that it's their victory, who believe that Obama is one of them, and that he has a mandate now so that he can do just what Franklin Roosevelt did in the New Deal.
That's what Michael Gerson, a former speechwriter for President Bush, worries about. Gerson says nothing Obama said during the campaign indicates when or if he might push back against the Democratic leadership in Congress.
Bill Clinton, when he ran for president, challenged the consensus of his own party as a new Democrat. Barack Obama has not needed to do that in this election. That, to me, is a problem because that will empower the Democratic leadership of Congress to go in directions that Barack Obama may not be happy about. He doesn't have an alternative vision to the vision, the liberal vision of the Democratic leadership.
Then there's the clash of campaign promises with dollars and cents reality. Obama says he'll pay for his spending plans in part by raising taxes on the wealthy. But raising taxes is hard to do in a recession. He says he wants a big new alternative energy plan, new health care benefits, and more money for education. But he's also facing a deficit that could, very soon, reach $1 trillion. And then there's the economy, which is deteriorating by the week. Norm Ornstein.
He would like to have as a signature in his first 2 years a transformation of the healthcare system. We know he has to deal with the financial situation. He has to get the country moving again, dealing with what's probably a global recession. For both of those, you need broad bipartisan consensus, and it's not been there.
Obama ran as someone who could bridge partisan divisions. That claim will now be put to the test. On foreign policy, the challenges are just as great, and the roadmap Obama has laid down is sketchier. His running mate made it clear what he expected in the first 6 months for a young president just 4 years out of the Illinois state legislature. Mark my words, Joe Biden told a group of Democratic donors. Mark my words.
Watch, we're going to have an international crisis, a generated crisis, to test the metal of this guy.
Even without a generated crisis to test his mettle, Obama will inherit a plateful of intractable foreign policy problems.
The nice thing about a campaign is you can always talk in pretty black and white terms about what you'd like to do and what you think. And then, of course, the world's a very messy place.
That's foreign policy scholar Bob Kagan, who supported John McCain during the campaign.
I would imagine there are going to be gaps on any number of issues between campaign rhetoric and policy.
There's the war in Iraq, which might be harder to end as fast as Obama would like, and Afghanistan, which Obama has called the true front line in the war on terror, and where he's promised to put in more U.S. troops to defeat the Taliban and get Osama bin Laden. Bob Kagan.
Anyone who knows the Pakistan issue at all well will tell you that there are no easy solutions. It's not as if the Bush administration wasn't trying to get Osama bin Laden. It's not just that they're a bunch of idiots. It's not an easy thing to do. And I really think that the key officials in an Obama administration are going to have to roll up their sleeves, take a fresh look at these issues. And I would say it's very unclear where they're going to come out because there are no easy answers.
And there are no easy answers to a resurgent Russia, a nuclear-armed North Korea, or, says former Clinton administration official Michael O'Hanlon, perhaps the most pressing problem of all, Iran.
The Iranians still probably can build a nuclear bomb if they want. We don't have enough leverage to stop them or even make them pay a huge price for failing to do so.
Obama has said he would not allow Iran to get nuclear weapons. He's never taken the option of using military force off the table, but he's also stated a preference for the soft power of diplomacy, without explaining how he would create the leverage to stop Iran. Still, O'Hanlon says, despite all these problems, Obama will have one big advantage, the impact that his election will have around the world.
I think his supporters are right when they talk about the improvement to our image that will occur on January 21st, if not this week. Obama is probably going to have the most important boost that he achieves in American popularity simply by taking the oath of office. So I would acknowledge that. But then we have to figure out how to get something out of that in terms of serving our interests around the world.
Obama will certainly have a honeymoon. It's just not clear how long it will last at home or abroad. Mara Liasson, NPR News, Washington.
As always, thanks for listening to The Political Rewind. See the final blue-red shakedown on the 2008 election map at npr.org.